Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit and nonpartisan forum open to the public. To attend a Commonwealth Club event, check out our program listing at www.commonwealthclub.org. Now we join today's program of the Commonwealth Club.
Good evening. I'm Carol Lloyd, and I want to welcome you to tonight's meeting of Inforum, a division of the Commonwealth Club by and for people in their 20s and 30s with a mission to inspire debate around civic and social issues. Tonight, we'll discuss real estate in the Bay Area. Do you buy, sell, or wait? We've all heard about the housing bubble popping, bursting, leaking air, or not existing at all. But what does it mean to current and potential homeowners, especially in the Bay Area? It still has one of the highest median home prices in the U.S., but does that mean it's a better market for first-time buyers or those of you trying to sell your house or everyone else who has just chosen to rent? Tonight, our panel of distinguished experts will give advice that can help all of us figure out how to navigate through the murky waters known as the Bay Area real estate market. Now let me introduce our panel. Former president of California Association of Realtors, Vince Malta, is a real estate broker and third-generation realtor in San Francisco. Cynthia Kroll is the senior regional economist for the Fisher Center for Real Estate and Urban Economics at UC Berkeley. She is well known for her research on California economic trends and their implications for real estate development and land development issues. Joseph Perkins is head of the Home Builders Association of Northern California. He also writes a monthly column about housing for the ANG newspapers in the East Bay and hosts a weekly radio broadcast on KNBR. Richard Arzaga is a wealth planning advisor for FSC Securities in San Ramon, advising clients about, among other things, real estate investments. He also teaches a real estate investment course at UC Santa Cruz. Please welcome our panel. Okay, my first question is for Cynthia Kroll. You've been a cautionary voice for many years now, even during the bubble, warning us that the housing appreciation can't continue without commensurate growth in jobs and income. Now that the markets have cooled somewhat, foreclosure rates are rising. As an economist, what do you hope people should think about when they make a decision to buy a home?
Well, first I want to say that I have a really good record in forecasting because for about 5 years I've been forecasting this slowdown. Of course, for four of them, I had to explain why it hadn't slowed down yet. I get a lot of calls from people who want to know, is this a good time to buy? And the first thing I remind them of is that buying a home is different from buying a stock because you're buying a service. At the same time, you're buying a home, at least if you're planning to occupy that home as the owner. And so you need to really think about what you want in that service, what's the difference between owning that home and renting it, can you afford it, what can you afford, what are you willing to trade off within your price range in terms of commuting distance, size of the home, the neighborhood that you live in. So there are a lot of different choices that are center around using the home as a service. And whether or not you can afford to buy what you want, how it compares to what the cost of rent is really the first thing you should ask.
Great.
The value of,
go ahead.
The value of that home as an investment should be part of that total assessment, but it's not the only thing.
My next question is for Vince Malta. What happened last year? The prices slowed down. Some people said things were falling apart. Some people said they were bottoming and they're coming up. Why was what was the market all about last year?
Well, The number one question I was asked last year as president of CAR was, is this the bubble? Is this the turnaround in the market? And I think it's still out as to whether the slowdown that occurred last year have we bottomed out from that slowdown, or is it going to continue? Last year could be characterized as a year where there was this great gap between seller and buyer expectation. When you had a market like you did in 2004 and 5, with, you know, a record market with double-digit appreciation, in fact, double-digit appreciation in many parts of our state over the last 5 years, sellers' expectations were quite great. And sellers, interestingly enough, did not, by and large, need to sell last year. The economy was very strong. So it's very unusual that you have a slowdown in the real estate market when the economy is still humming along. Buyers, on the other hand, sensed that this is it, okay? And they were, their expectations was the market was coming apart, so if we're going to get something, we're going to have to really go in low, okay? So last year was a huge gap between buyer and seller expectation. This year, it's expected that that gap is going to narrow, that both seller and buyers are going to move more towards the center, more towards what we can characterize as a balanced market, rather than a market that somewhat has been on steroids, where buyers really felt, if I don't buy, I'm going to miss the market. I'm, you know, it's, you know, I won't be able to afford it the following year. They don't feel the pressure that they did in 2004 and 5.
Rich Arzaga, a lot of arguments about buying real estate is that it's a great investment, and if you get in now, then your home will be worth millions of dollars, and you can gradually build equity, the prices will naturally rise, it's an outrageous opportunity to leverage small savings into a gold mine. In your work, what do you see as the client's expectations for real estate, and how do you think those are sometimes misconceptions about what the real estate market really is?
So that's a good question. My experience is that most clients view their residential property as investment as well. And residential real estate, where somebody lives there, is really more of a lifestyle asset than it is an investment. I think one of the biggest mistakes people make is that they assume that because they live there, it's also an asset for them to retire on. So if you fast forward your life to the age of 70 or 80, and if you can imagine being that old, and I work with clients at that age, I work with clients a great range of ages, for them to start pulling equity out of their home is one of the most frightening things in their lives, because they see themselves losing a place to live. Their biggest fear is being homeless. And so when you actually get there and you have this asset and you intended to pull from it as an investment source and you're at that age and you start drawing the first penny, it's scary for them. So I would coach my clients, and I do, that their real estate residential is really a lifestyle decision, and it really is an investment. The second part of that is that if it is an investment, it's probably not a great investment. I know there's a lot of realtors in the room here, and I don't have enough time to rationalize this, but I pull from a figure that I saw 3 or 4 months ago. It was in Money Magazine and Business 2.0, and the data was they took a look at appreciation over a long period of time all over the country and in major markets. And what they found is on the average in the U.S., the average appreciation rate, which is why most people invest, by the way, in real estate, and it's probably not a fundamental reason to invest, by the way, but it was about 2.5%. And in the San Francisco Bay Area, since 1949, the appreciation rate has only been 4.2%. So is that a great investment? The rate of inflation is probably just that much, which makes sense. The rate of inflation keeps up with homes. And we just had a little bit of a bubble the last 10 or 15 years or so, and are feeling kind of giddy. So I work with clients to help understand what that looks like, and then hopefully parcel that out and begin to see what they really want from their decision.
Joseph Perkins, you've been quoted as saying there's no time like the present to buy a home. So is that true in all cases? We've heard different perspectives here.
Where do you think? Where was I quoted like that? You know what? I'm still bullish on housing as a mid to long-term investment. Let me give you some perspective here, Carol, and for our audience. I remember before I took my current position, and April will mark my 2 years here, I remember reading commentaries by one of your colleagues in the media, Carol, Paul Krugman, who was predicting the collapse of the housing market, not only in the greater New York City area, but throughout the country, particularly in coastal markets like California, the San Francisco Bay Area, San Diego, where I previously lived. Now, Paul Krugman is a well-respected columnist for the New York Times, and he was writing these kind of commentaries all the way back in the fall of 2001. Well, let me say this. For those of you all who are faithful readers of the New York Times, just like you're faithful readers of Carol's column, and you took to heart the words of Paul Krugman back in, say, September, October of 2001, even after the terror attacks, and you were sitting on the fence, ready to buy property, but because of Krugman's warning, his Cassandra-like warnings, you didn't buy. Well, let me tell you what he cost you. He cost you nearly $250,000 if you are the average Bay Area homeowner. To me, that amounts to economic malpractice. And so I said all that to say that if we view the housing market as a snapshot rather than a moving picture, then I would say, well, I can understand people being kind of uncertain. But we're talking about a mid to longer term proposition, and it's always a good time to buy. You all can applaud if you like.
Cynthia Kroll, the California Association of Realtors recently came out with a study that said that Californians were taking on more debt than ever before, and that over 21% were taking out 100% financing to buy their homes, compared to 4.5% in 2000. The percentage among the first-time home buyers was over 40%. Do these numbers concern you, and why?
Well, first I want to say I'm glad to hear I was in such good company with Paul Krugman in my false predictions, or my belated predictions, although I never went out on a limb and said there would be a bubble bursting. Yes, these numbers concern me, and I would say it concerned me as even before I heard those numbers, as I watched the ways in which first-time homebuyers or even move-up homebuyers were affording to pay the higher and higher prices in many communities in the Bay Area. It concerns me to the extent that many loans were also dependent really on essentially a big payment later on, the holding off the interest and paying it later on, and that those home buyers would face 5 years perhaps a much bigger payment. They were assuming that A, they would have more equity in their home then, and B, they would have higher incomes then. But for those home buyers that were already very much on the spending to the limit that they could afford, any shift in interest rate can affect them. So it's a concern for the home buyers. It's also a concern for the lenders. And when we discussed those numbers earlier today, I said, I really wonder who's lending that money. And in fact, the share of loans that are what are called subprime are rising. But to the extent that defaults on these loans then feed back into the mortgage industry, that can have spillover effects in the economy as a whole. And then it's a concern for homeowners if that happens, because that in turn may affect the price of homes. So yes, I have concern about that. I think, on the other hand, that there are a lot of the traditional long-term lending institutions are not into this in a big way.
Yeah. Vince Malta, you've talked a lot about micro markets, and so what are the safest bets? If you've decided that it's time to buy right now, where do you recommend people look, or where are there places where you can get a more affordable, Are there certain markets which are softer where you can get a better deal?
Sure. Well, there's a lot of inverse relationships that go on. You know, a softer market means perhaps that local economy, job growth, and economic expansion might be less than in an area that's a hot market, for instance. And as a result, it might be even greater risk of depreciation in price, et cetera. But you have to look at sub-markets, I think. Again, when you're looking at the whole picture of markets, et cetera, what you get for the state number, the national number, the state number, and local numbers of the Bay Area may vary greatly from what's going on in San Jose right now and what's going on in San Francisco and what's going on in Brentwood. I just got back from Brentwood. There's a lot of construction that's gone on in Brentwood, for instance, which is in North County. It's between Solano County and here. And builders are offering tremendous incentives, okay? Now, people that have purchased their home last year or the year before, they're competing right now with those builders offering these tremendous incentives, okay? Now, if you work in the Bay Area and you're commuting from Brentwood, you're finding also when gas prices are going up and you're finding out that your commute's an hour to an hour and a half, that may tend to hurt those markets where people are traveling great distances to get to their jobs, et cetera. So there are risks. I want to follow up on one thing Joseph said. I agree with him. There's always a good time to buy, and it's always a good time. The trick is when to sell. It's not always a good time to sell. If your plan in purchasing is for, let's say, a 1 or 2 year plan, and then you're going to sell, forget about it. Okay, forget about it in this market. You should sit down with a realtor professional, figure out possibly a 5-year plan as to how you're going to be able to hold on to maintain a property. And otherwise, I really never met someone that regretted buying their first home. I've met plenty of people that regretted never buying their first home. But when you have to hold on short term, that's when a lot of risk occurs.
Are there any other micro markets you can tell us about, like is the condo market or the TIC market particularly interesting now? Or?
Well, for a lot of people in San Francisco, the TIC market seems to be a rather hot market but a very risky market because the governmental officials could put this out of business overnight. At least they try, because every time a TIC occurs, it could be a diminution in the number of rental units in the housing stock of San Francisco. So a TIC unit is when people get together and they buy, let's say, a 4-unit building as a partnership, okay? And you enter into a partnership agreement, but you're not condos. Condos, you own an undivided interest in the property, okay? This, you just own a 25% interest on title to the property. There are not 4 different loans. There's 1 master loan to this property. So some of these partnerships could be wonderful or they could be like a bad marriage, okay? And if you've ever been through a bad marriage, it's something that is not easy to get out of, okay, sometimes. And that's what happens with the TIC interest. Well, TICs, you'll find that you get more property for your money, so it's very attractive in that regard. But, again, you have to look at the other parties. What are their intentions? Do they intend a condo? I tell people that when you're buying a TIC, because the restrictions that San Francisco has created in the number of units they allow every year, it could take over 10 years before you can convert a TIC into a condo. And I tell them to go in with the intention of never being able to convert. So if you just go in with your eyes open. You may never be able to convert this, but it's a nice place
to live.
Even
if it's a 2-unit?
2 units. There's a 2-unit exception, and thank you for pointing that out. If it's 2 units, you are allowed to convert. If 2 owners buy a property together, they're both on title, and they both live in the property. San Francisco allows you to become condos if you live in the property for 1 year, and you then have to file a map, et cetera. It's a theoretical one year. However, it takes
3 years.
3 years to go through the process of getting it actually
done. You know what,
done.
Carol? You see, if you buy a new home, you don't have to worry about that.
Which leads me to my next question, which is where are the new homes for... Where are the new homes being built for all the young people who want to buy homes in the Bay Area?
Well, they're being built anywhere they allow us to build them. Let me tell you something. This is a very, very difficult market for the young person. You mentioned at the top of the this gathering about 20-somethings and 30-somethings. I remember when I was way back in the good old days, when I was 20-something, even 30-something, and you could graduate from college or even graduate from grad school Dr. Kroll, and hope that after working about 2 or 3 or perhaps even 5 years, you might be able to buy your own home. That is decreasingly a prospect for today's 20 and 30-somethings because we have a market that is really out of whack. And frankly, without the help of parents in a lot of cases, there are a lot of young people here who merely have, say, advanced degrees who can't afford to live in a city like San Francisco. And so what's happening? You mentioned Brentwood. Well, they increasingly have to move further and further away from the city center and live, I think, in residences that aren't their first preference. And I think that is probably one of the most critical issues confronting this region today, and that is for the young people who are to be our future leaders. They find it increasingly difficult to move into first-time housing.
Are there certain areas that you recommend people looking?
Wherever you can find something. What I would say is that if there was a bright side to last year's slowdown in the market, is that the number of multifamily units, condos in particular, that were built increased significantly in a lot of parts of the region, and that provides an opportunity. But actually, for people who are looking to be first-time home buyers, the best opportunities at the moment, I would say, are condo conversions. I think that's the point of entry for a lot of younger people. If you're fortunate enough to live in rental property that's being converted into condominiums and you have the first right of refusal on the unit in which you live. And let me say something. I think local governments throughout the Bay Area ought to encourage those conversions. And frankly, I think we ought to subsidize those conversions for our young adults. And that would be something that I'd find very supportive and be interesting to know how many people in this room would agree with that. One person. Here's two. Okay. I've got a lot of work to do.
Rich Arzaga, when you have clients come in who say that they definitely want to invest in real estate, where do you lead them?
Well, let's see. The decision on investing in real estate is a process. And if it's a process, then there's a series of things. But it starts with the questions, why real estate? And by the way, I love real estate as an investment as well. We have a nice net worth, and a little bit more than half of ours is in commercial real estate outside of the state. So I'm a very big believer in income-producing property. And that's why I attract clients like that. But the start of the process is, you know, why real estate? What will it do for you? What are the objectives with it? And, you know, and second, is it suitable for you? I mean, a young couple with $100,000 of liquid assets and they have nothing else, and they're, you know, kind of working in startup companies, they put all their money in a real estate transaction, an investment, and something happens with their lives, and it's the wrong place to be. So I find that sometimes they're it's not suitable for them, or there might be a different way to achieve that objective, you know, by using private REITs or something else that might achieve their objective with real estate without putting them in a difficult position. So after we determine this, what the goals are, what the suitability is, then we explore the options and we see which one is the best option. So, and I got to tell you, with every client, every objective is different. There's no clients that are the same. So the outcomes are all entirely different. Everyone's age and net worth and goals.
When we spoke earlier, you said that in the Bay Area, though, there's some commonality, which is that residential real estate is not a typical investment.
Yeah, it's not a great investment asset. It's not a great asset as an investment. Now, I think we're getting the discussion here confused with residential versus investment. And so now I'm talking about investment property. And I do analysis on folks who own fourplexes and single families and townhomes all day long. That's what I do. And I see what that looks like. And when you take a look at it, and those of you who own income property, go home and do this. But, you know, the ultimate goal is, well, you know, I think I'll have this asset for a while. I'll let the tenants pay the mortgage. And then after about 15 years, it's free and clear, and off I go. I have 5 of these, and I'm in great shape. The reality is that if you took a look at your asset today, and if you just scratched the mortgage out today, just assume it was paid for, and you look at the cash flow, the net cash flow on that equity, you will find you will be shocked and disappointed that the cash flow on that equity is somewhere between on a single family from 1 to 3% of the equity. On a fourplex, it might be 3 to 4% perhaps. It's very, very low in the Bay Area. So, and I really care. What I care about is that asset performs for that client and that meets their objectives. And I got to tell you, taking on the risk of owning real estate without mitigating the risk, without creating the entity, and having a 4% return rate, and that's after the mortgage is paid, after 15 years of that, and managing the property, is you're better off, frankly, in putting your money in a CD or the Orange account. So, you know, this once folks see this, they realize how their asset's performing. The next question is, well, you know what? This doesn't work as well as I hoped. What's next? And then the outcomes from that vary as well by client. But I got to tell you, just go home and take a look at something you're thinking about or take a look at something you own and scratch that mortgage and do a real analysis on the cash flow. And you will see that it's not very pretty here in the Bay Area.
So that sort of segues into a question that I have for Vince Malta about I know a lot of people who want to sell but who are holding off right now and are even deciding to rent their houses. And they never really wanted to become landlords, but it's something that they feel tentative about selling now. And so I wondered, what do you recommend to people right now who are thinking about selling? What do they need to look at?
Well, first of all, they have to have a plan. Where's it going to go? Okay, my clients are doing one of two things. They're either going to sell with the intention of trading it into something else. And they tend to trade out of the area right now for the reasons that Rich brought up earlier, that the rate of return is very low, okay? Or they feel the taxes are at historic low, okay? The capital gains is at 15% at the national level, about 10% at the state level. So 25% to them is not such a bad proposition. They've made a lot of money, so they'll keep 75 cents on the dollar, okay? So some people are actually thinking that way. I just sold a property. I never sell, okay? We were in a situation where we wanted to buy a property every year in San Francisco, and we did that from 1984 to the year 2000, okay? And I got back from New Orleans, and I saw that natural disasters are a real thing, right? Okay, we went through 89, the whole thing, and there was an offer on my desk. And right now, I'm struggling to find a property that works for me. So if you're a seller, my advice to you is to have a plan up front, get an idea that, yeah, that's where I'm going to buy, that's the property I want, because you don't want to be in the situation where you're in an exchange and you have 45 days in which to designate a property and you can't find anything and you've just lost 25% of your net value because you've got to pay it in taxes.
You're talking about investment properties.
I'm talking investment property. For sellers generally, look, if you've held on to the property for the last 5 years, you made a lot of money. Move on, okay? potentially, if that's what fits into your plan. But where are you going to go, okay? And that's the situation. I run to some people, they've owned the property for 20 years, but they really don't know where they're going to go, and it doesn't really pay for them to sell. In many instances, because they're going to be moving out of state or whatever, it's a tremendous windfall for them. So if you have a plan on the other end, you're going to do fine.
Great. Not quite yet.
Never mind. First, right?
Joseph Perkins. Why don't home builders build more affordable housing? There's an emphasis on luxury condos and suburban McMansions, and none of which would be called starter homes, though they might be very lovely places to live. What needs to happen for communities to make sure that real affordable housing gets built?
Well, what I would say is when Vince's clients sell their homes, no one says, well, you really need to make that affordable. You get what the market bears. But builders would like nothing more than to be able to build houses that are affordable. I mean, I think we need to look at this in perspective. Why is it that real estate in the San Francisco Bay Area is something on more than three times more than it is in the rest of the country? What I would submit to you is that it's not that the people who are in my association, home builders that you've heard of, are three times greedier than builders in the rest of the country. The point is, it is three times more expensive, three times more difficult to build housing here in the Bay Area than it is in the rest of the country. You have to go through a labyrinthine approval process. We have impact fees here. there's one community in the East Bay, Livermore, where before you even like break ground, it costs you more than $100,000. So when you combine the cost of land, which is artificially inflated because of all the land use restrictions here in the Bay Area, you couple that with impact fees, you add to that the approval process, and before even a brick is laid, that house costs more than $300,000. And so I'm saying, if we had the same rules of engagement here in the Bay Area that they have in, say, Florida or Texas, you would see homes that, say, someone who's merely a doctor or lawyer fresh out of school could afford.
Is that also part of the problem where you go to Florida or Texas and you say, sure is a lot of sprawl here? Is that the trade-off? Is it sprawl or affordability?
About that? Well, one person's sprawl is another person's dream come true. You know what? It's always the next guy's house that's the sprawl. Let me tell you something. Every single home that every single person here lives in was sprawl to the person who was there before you got there. And so that's the reality, folks. And we were just talking about young people and where they're going to live. Well, let me tell you, where they're going to live are places that are considered, that will be considered sprawl one day. So let's keep that in perspective.
Cynthia Kroll, in your analysis, what's on the horizon for the local economy? Do you see the jobs and incomes catching up with the housing prices to make the Bay Area more affordable? Or have we all gotten so used to the high price of housing that it's sort of taken on a different weight for us and we're accepting this new reality?
Well, first of all, we actually don't do forecasting at our center.
Take a stab at it.
But I will be happy to give you my opinions and impressions on this question.
Right.
So the question is, will incomes catch up to housing?
Yeah.
Well, Nat, the next response to this one, you don't do forecasting, is to ask five questions in response to that question. What do you mean by catch up? Catch up relative, will our incomes rise to the point where the percentage cost of a home to someone here, the cost of a home as a percentage of their income is the same as in the average part of the country? That's one way to look at it. Will things drop back to the way they were 5 years ago? You know, there are a lot of different ways to ask that question. If you're asking, will we start to look like the rest of the U.S., the answer is no, and we've just heard the reasons why. That restrictions on building are a big part of why home costs are so high here. The attractiveness of the area is another factor, and the kinds of opportunities, the quality of life, all of those things contribute to our having a higher cost relative to other parts of the country. Then when you look at, well, what about relative to 5 years ago, are we going to see a continuing gap between incomes, a widening gap over time between incomes and home prices here? And that's much more uncertain. There are reasons why we don't do that kind of forecasting. But one of the things I'd say we have seen, and that is a concern and that's likely to continue, is the widening differentials. You know, that there are some occupations where income growth is becoming strong again, and in those occupations, people will be able to afford homes and even be contributing to the high price of homes by bidding them up. There, on the other hand, are occupations where 10 years ago, someone who had worked in that occupation for 10 years and saved could have afforded to buy a home, who now are simply totally priced out of that market and for whom it looks quite hopeless in terms of being able to afford a home in the future.
So maybe more of the same.
Well,
you want
I'm saying,
to jump in there?
Can I add to that? You know what? I think Dr. Kroll is right on. Here's the reality, folks. We will never reach equilibrium where the person earning the average income in the Bay Area can afford the median-priced home. Let me say this. For those of us who are blessed to be homeowners, if we were not homeowners and we had to get out in this market today, almost everyone in this room could not afford the median price home. And that is the reality. And that's not going to get better unless we see some dramatic change in the way we handle this market here. And what I am telling you is that we have some underlying fundamentals in terms of restrictions on home building so that there will always be excess demand. It's almost built into it. And so I'm saying, unless we do something artificial and say that, okay, builder, it doesn't matter what you pay for the house or how much it costs you to build the house, you've got to sell it for 20% of what it costs you. That's not going to be happening without a revolt and builders with pitchforks and torches heading over the hill. And so we have a fundamental problem where about 15% of people in the Bay Area can afford the median-priced home if they aren't putting the equity they built up in a previous home. And that is the result, and this is the reality, of years and years of public policy, which has made it more difficult to build new homes here to meet the growth in population and employment that we've experienced over the last 30 years here. And let me tell you something. We're going to add another 10, 20 million people over the next 30 years or so. That situation we're talking about today is only going to get worse, and that's the hard reality of what we're up against.
Is it also Prop 13 that keeps taxes artificially low?
Prop 13's problem, I'll let someone answer this, is it's the fiscalization of land use, and what it did is it made it for cities like San Francisco and cities throughout the Bay Area, it just created a situation where it is better for them to allow commercial and retail rather than housing, because most of the property taxes that we pay, and we pay some of the highest property taxes in the country, those of us here, most of it goes to the state, and a small percentage of that actually is returned to our area. So if you are a city council or a county government and you're looking at whether to approve new housing or approving, say, Walmart or some of these big box stores, you're going to choose the big box stores because you can keep all of your sales tax revenue. So that's what Prop 13 hath wrought.
The influence of it. A couple of weeks ago, the New York Times wrote about younger buyers often approaching their first home, and this is a quote, with cold calculation and an appetite for risk more associated with real estate moguls. But the story was about young people buying generally far beyond their means because they wanted a nice home. And what's really driving the real estate buyers now, and any of you can answer this, do you think it's emotions or do you think it's cold calculation?
It's a combination of both, but you know, in 2004 and 5, I could see more of the cold calculation because people really felt that if they didn't get into the market again, they felt they're going to be priced out of it. Now, they feel more reserved. They don't have to do it, is what they feel. But the fact of the matter is, every year they put off on that decision to buy a home. It's every year, perhaps, that they get away from never buying a home. There are tremendous advantages of buying a home, okay, tax incentive-wise, and the doctor already pointed out it's got to pencil out for you. So it's always been, in my business, it's always been a portion of it has been emotion, okay? And if they're going to buy more home than they need, perhaps they're doing the right thing if they want to do a long-term hold of the home, because people are doing things with their home that they haven't been doing before. They're working out of their home now, more than ever, rather than having to go to an office every day. So the home does a bunch of different functions that it's never done before. So it's a combination of both, I believe.
You want to take that?
Yeah. You know, I think there's two questions that have been floating around here, and one is buy, sell, or hold, and that implies there's timing in buying or selling or holding. And I'm not sure. Somebody I respect a lot, a well-known real estate author, emailed me back when he found out I was on the panel. And he said, Rich, he said, I can sum up that panel in one fortune cookie message. Who knows? And I thought that was a great – I thought that was right on the button. Who knows? But the other part about affordability is really, I think, more about suitability. And I think the idea that somebody's totally leveraging their income and debt to purchase is quite – can be quite risky. I do calculations. I have a dear friend of mine who is I consider very wealthy. He's vacationing 40% of the time, and you know he's quite successful as a real estate investor. Yet he rents, and for him, renting. And by the way, I acknowledge the fact that many of us, including myself, need a place to call our own, and need a. So I hear that, and I feel that way as well. But he's quite wealthy, and he takes time. He does what he pleases. He does it well, and you know he's very comfortable renting. And frankly, for him and quite a few of the clients of mine who thought about that, financially it makes a whole lot of sense. So I think that there's a real argument to that.
Thank you. 5 minutes before we're going to move to the audience questions, so please start lining up at the mic in the aisle if you have a question. The number of single-family homebuyers under 25 has nearly doubled in the past decade. That's a fact I found today. Given the fact that most people in their early 20s only stay at their jobs for an average of 18 months, does it make sense for young people to buy houses? Are you ever too young to buy? What are the decisions that need to go? Is it just deciding to stay somewhere for 5 years, or what factor should go into making that decision?
I think that 5-year thing is misguided. I think it's well intended, but I think saying I think it's really about what your long term. I mean, you just can't time the market. Well, I'll be here in 5 years. The market will go up, come down, go back up. Maybe I'll break even. You know, just it really is a lifestyle choice. It's like, is this a community I want to live in? How long do I have to live here? What has changed my life? Do I have to move? Do I have to move out of the area? Do I have to move up because we're having children? So I think it's really more of the decision of buy or sell is more than just time. It's more about what happens in somebody's life. I think 5 years is kind of if you have to time the market, I think 5 years is too short. And I think that a nice, comfortable range, and I hate timing the market because it never works, but, you know, 7-10 years out there, that would be a nice time for the market to kind of come back up and give you some of that 4.2% gain, right?
Do you want to jump in there?
Yeah. And generally, I've been telling people it's got to be at least 5 years. What was happening, again, the speculator, really, thank goodness, in a sense, is out of the market, okay? What has happened is California has never really been a tremendous speculative market as compared to some other markets. In Las Vegas, 40% of the sales in 2004-05 were people that were buying a home and selling it within a year's time, okay? And that market is, those markets are very vulnerable because that the speculative market is gone. And so when I say 5 years, I say it's at least a 5-year plan because I don't want people to go in and think they're going to buy property and it's going to be worth more next year or the year after. They've got to think longer term. And so they have to look at all those aspects of where do they see themselves personally at 25? Do they see themselves marrying? And do they see themselves possibly getting a different job, moving out of an area? So many different things that I want them to think beyond just a couple of years is why I use 5 years as sort of a rule. It has to be sort of at least.
Great. Does anyone else have any questions amongst yourselves? No?
I'd like to hear from our audience. Right. They look.
Okay, for the radio audience, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club's In Forum program, and tonight we're talking about real estate in the Bay Area. I'm Carol Lloyd, San Francisco columnist, and I'm here with Vince Malta, former president of the California Association of Realtors, Cynthia Kroll, economist for the Fisher Center for Real Estate, Joseph Perkins, head of the Home Builders Association of Northern California, and Rich Arzaga, wealth planning advisor for the FSC Securities in San Ramon. Now let's go to the audience for questions.
My question to the panelists is, it seems to me that a lot of the question of whether or not we've seen the end of the bursting of the bubble or the downturn, if you will, depends on what the Federal Reserve will do. There are an awfully large number of new owners on some type of adjustable rate mortgage who I don't think would be able to afford to make their payments if the Fed were to increase rates over the next year, how do you see that playing out?
Who do you want to ask first? Cynthia Kroll, you want to take that? More predictions.
Hard question. A shift like that will probably take a while to be felt throughout the economy. One reason is that a lot of the adjustable rate loans have a time period within which the rate is not going to change or will change very little, and it has a maximum amount within which it can change. I would say an increase in interest rates, along with the high numbers that we've been hearing of people who have no down payment on their home and therefore no equity to walk away from, in a sense, is certainly a concern. But I think it's really hard. I find it hard to predict how that will play out in the economy in terms of what the scale is. Anyone else have a broader answer to that?
You know, I have a short thought to that. You know, that again implies that you want to time the market, and it's much.
I've already bought, but I'm thinking that the market
I mean
is probably still a ways to go down.
Yeah. So I didn't mean you personally at all.
Right.
But you know, the thing is, if you got to buy and it's right, then buy, and if you got to sell and it's the right time, then sell. And I wouldn't worry about time in the market. I mean, that's your priorities and your goals in life are much more important than getting that extra 4 or 5% over a 4 or 5-year period.
Let me just give you a few broad numbers. If what you're really worried about is, will this burst the bubble and send it down 20, 25%?
Well, it would seem to be a worry considering how many first-time buyers in California are using the type of adjustable rate product versus putting down 20% for a down payment.
And, you know, I guess there are a few things to say. First of all, that historically, even in really difficult situations, the Bay Area market has held up pretty well. And part of it is that it is so hard to get in and it's so hard to build more space that it hasn't gotten as overbuilt as ever other places. In Southern California, for example, they did have a 10-year period in the 1990s when prices went down ultimately 20 to 30, 35% depending on the market, and it took 10 years for them to come back up. The other thing to keep in mind is also, and I think you mentioned this, that it really depends on the product, and that probably the place we've seen the most building is in multifamily in the condo market in the Bay Area, and I would expect, you know, on the one hand, that could become softer because there's more of a base of buildings coming in. On the other hand, probably the places that people are stretched the most is in the single family.
Okay, next question.
Hi. According to Architecture 2030 in a conference call last week, I believe in California, 30% of greenhouse gases come from real estate and building operations and so forth. I'm wondering how much the commodity nature of what we're the market contributes to that, of building to sell versus building to match the particular needs. You know, I'm looking at seeing locally a doubling in the number of co-housing communities in the Bay Area. And Mr. Malto, you mentioned micro markets. I wonder if you're seeing growth like that, especially for the aging boomer population.
You know, my practice is generally in San Francisco, and what I see being built are, you know, 1.5 million condo high rises, okay, which are really going to work great for those people moving from the suburbs that want to come back to the city after all their kids have grown up, et cetera. But generally, I think people are thinking more green. I think they have to think more green. We have to build along transportation corridors. We have to look at what we're putting into properties because we're dealing with all these environmental issues today. I'm dealing with lead issues. I'm dealing with mold issues, on and on and on. So the gentleman down here, Joseph, probably can answer the building questions better. But all those issues, I think we have to be responsible. I don't want smart growth to mean no growth, but it does have to be smart in a sense.
Hello. I'm in my mid-20s, and I live here in San Francisco. I love this city, and I want to call it my home, and I want to buy my place here in San Francisco. And I've been saving money every year since I've graduated in my gainfully employed job. But the challenge I face is that if I want to buy right now, I would have to put a pretty sizable down payment to still have a monthly payment that's reasonable, because even with a large down payment, basically my monthly payments for my mortgage would be triple my rent for my one bedroom in the Inner Sunset. Combining that with additional payments on a monthly basis for condominiums, and then, of course, holding out until the end of the year when I get all those tax breaks that everyone always talks about, I would probably be eating ramen or even worse than that, which destroys the whole point of why I would want to live in this beautiful city. Mm. So outside of the fact that I'm saving on a monthly basis and trying to save, is there anything else I could do? Is there organizations I can talk to? Beyond looking at ticks, beyond looking at some of those condo conversions, because I love my landlord, I don't think he's going to change it over to condominiums. What can I do to live here?
Well, generally, there's the mayor's office of housing which there's a tremendous waiting list for the number of units, and there's a lot of controls in relation to what happens if and when you sell, if you're lucky enough to get one of these units. There's also, you should talk to some mortgage loan brokers regarding some first-time buyer programs that might work better for you. But I have to generally tell you, if you're putting less than a certain down payment, you're going to be paying mortgage insurance on top of your regular principal and interest. So it does get more expensive. So there has got to be a way to structure a deal. Perhaps it could work better in your instance. But generally, if you have to do all the things that you're talking about, I think what Rich said at the end of the table, maybe sometime it is not in your best interest to buy if you've got to change your life to such an extent where you're living for that property and it's got control of you. It may not be the right decision for you at this time, okay? And if you want to look outside of San Francisco, that's something else to look at. But again, don't have the home own you. You should own the home.
And those are mortgage loan brokers. Where would I find listings for that? Just in Yellow Pages?
Are there any mortgage loan brokers in the room? There
you go. I will be outside.
Get a card.
Next question.
Actually, a comment on that is we bought our house in February of 2005, so if you're talking about timing, not really the best time. But if I had to do it over again, I would probably rent. I've been told all my life that the best thing ever is to buy, you know, your own house, own your own home, and I certainly don't regret the decision, but looking at it from a purely economic standpoint and not getting the emotions involved, we would have been better off just renting for, you know, what we ended up paying, for what we got. So if you're thinking about buying a house, you really should analyze those numbers and think hard about it. Because sometimes it makes sense, sometimes not.
Do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Sorry. The question is, in the Bay Area, how much has home prices ever, you know, in the past 30, 40 years, really gone down?
The worst was in the 90s, and it went down 5%. But there were some markets where it went down more.
East Bay.
On the other hand, I think the worst downturn during that period was in Silicon Valley. So it went down about 25% in some markets there, but it's more than made it up since then.
More of a supply and demand type of thing?
That was much more economy driven than the current slowdown is. We had a 3-year recession here.
Let me add to what Cynthia said. You see these scary stories in Money Magazine and on CNN and all the rest, and I'm telling you, our market is different than practically every other market in the country. San Francisco is what's considered a super city. And I would extend that to say we live in a super region. There are always people who want to live here. We are blessed to live in one of the most fabulous places in the entire country, if not the world, in which to live. And that is why some of the basic fundamental market forces that you see at work in the rest of the country aren't at work here. You know, I hear about the slowdown in the marketplace. And do you know what region of the country saw the biggest decline in housing prices last year? You would say, well, it must be one of these coastal markets like San Diego or L.A. or San Francisco Bay Area. No, it was Detroit. folks, and that's the reality. Let me tell you something. You know, Mark Twain once said, look, invest in land. They're not making any more of it. That's the reality here in the Bay Area. And let me tell you something else here, and I'm gonna say this publicly, and the people who might be listening on the radio, I'm going to issue the same challenge to them. I'm going to call it the Pepsi Challenge. I'm going to say, anyone who thinks, oh, there's a bubble here in the Bay Area and the prices are going to decline, we're going to see 20% declines and all the rest, here's my Pepsi Challenge. Let's go out and randomly find any new house that comes on the market today. And let's come back 5 years from now, not seven, not 10, but 5 years from now. And if that price has declined against inflation, I will pay you the difference, and I'll give you a Pepsi.
All right. All right. Next question.
Well, just following on to that, PMI, and for those in the audience who are not aware of PMI is a mortgage insurance company, headquartered in Walnut Creek. They published a report, I believe it was last month, where Bay Area or San Francisco has a 58% chance of seeing price declines in the next 2 years, and Oakland County seeing price declines of 60% chance in the next 2 years. So I thought perhaps you could comment on that. And also just talking about the mortgage to rent ratios, I think that was mentioned by another person that came up here, that he would have to pay twice his rent in a mortgage. And I know the national average, and actually just did this exercise today, is about, or for the past 10 years since the early 90s, has been about 1.3. And here in the Bay Area, I don't know what that has been historically, but I was hoping that perhaps somebody could comment on if a ratio of 2 is high for the Bay Area or not.
Cynthia, do you know about the...
I didn't fully understand.
Price to rent ratio.
The price to rent ratio. I can't comment on that.
Your mortgage payment versus rent.
Yeah,
or the price of a home versus the value of a home, if you just rent, annual rent divided by the, you know, going mortgage rate.
Yeah, I don't. I should have that statistic in mind, but I really don't know what that is. In terms of the forecast that there will be price declines, and we've already seen the AFEO index for the East Bay, I believe, has declined slightly. San Francisco is either steady or a slight decline, but that doesn't tell you much if it's not telling you how much. I mean, we're looking at 0.5%. We're looking at what I would call leveling off, although it comes with a slight decline here and there. And again, it very much depends on the location. But the other encouraging thing, in a sense, for home prices is that rents are starting to go up again. I mean, rents were much more vulnerable to the economic downswing than were home prices, and that was true, actually, in earlier periods as well, that rents have been more volatile and have moved with the economy in a more predictable way, and now that the economy is improving, rents are starting to go up.
I Rich? The question was, is the ratio of, you know, going from rental to ownership, should it be twice as much? I think that's what that was. Mm-hmm. And I guess a couple of thoughts. Remember, home ownership has some tax benefits to it, including writing off the mortgage, so you need to factor that.
Yeah, that's why I said the national average was 1.5, mm-hmm. and 2 is a bit high, or at least certainly high for me, and tax benefits would be meager. So, I'm just wondering if 2 is where the Bay Area has always been, or if that's high historically.
So I guess, and you're asking about the ratios and standards and benchmarks and so on, and I guess my thought is it's more important in terms of what's right for you. I mean, if it's 2 or 3 times higher, and I don't know what that number is, by the way, but as long as it fits for you and it's the right place for you and it's suitable for you, and it really doesn't matter. I mean, we all make a choice to live here. The fact that it's expensive is just one of the, you know, maybe the downsides to that. It's a great place to live. Wow. But, you know, the more important question is that payment suitable for you more than what is the ratio and comparing it and having some anxiety over it being so much higher than it is elsewhere around the country. So I still don't have an answer for you, but maybe that's another way to look at that.
Next question.
I think the ratio is historically high, though. The answer to your question is it's high right now.
Okay.
historically at a high right now.
It's,
yes.
Well, it's historically higher than it's been on average, yeah.
I have a couple of questions. One is somewhat more abstract and one is a little more concrete. So the first is for Professor Kroll. So some people during the dot-com bust were thinking that there was going to be a real estate bust at the same time and were puzzled as to why it didn't really happen that way. And so I had sort of a theory that that the Silicon Valley was a mechanism for sucking capital from all over the country and sinking it into Bay Area real estate, and it just stayed here, which might be why the real estate prices remained high. So that was the first question. And the second question was for Mr. Arzega. So many people, when they're considering an asset allocation, they, for some reason, they exclude their home from their asset allocation. They think it's qualitatively a different thing. And so I was wondering what is your opinion on that and whether that's wise. And I think most people say that real estate should be a very small part of your asset allocation. It should be like 10%. So in that case, if you included your primary residence as your asset allocation, you would have to be really...
Okay. I'm sorry. We're going to have to wind this up, so I'd like them to be able to answer the question before it's...
Okay, I think you got the question. Thank you.
Okay, well, I can quickly answer. I was one of those people who said, look what's happening to Silicon Valley. Home prices have to go down, and they went down very little. And so I thought a lot about why that was the case. And I have two hypotheses. One is that rents tanked Silicon Valley lost 20% of its job base. That's a huge drop in jobs. Rents tanked. My one hypothesis is that a lot of the people who were in Silicon Valley who left with the downturn, and they did leave because unemployment didn't go up anywhere near 20%, those people were young adults who'd moved in for those jobs, were renters, moved out again, heavily affected the rental market, much more than the home ownership market. Then the other hypothesis is pent-up demand, that there were a lot of people who had moved out to the outskirts of the Bay Area because they couldn't get into Silicon Valley. The housing market was so tight, and that they helped to buoy up home prices when people left. So those were my hypotheses.
And I'm going to add two more to that. And I think that a lot of people lost faith in the stock market, and they put it into something that they could hold and feel that didn't disappear overnight. And secondly, there was 9/11, and people had this wanting to be secure and be in a secure place at home and maybe travel less abroad. So they concentrated inward, I think, a lot.
Great.
I'll try to make
just
it quick.
Just quickly, yeah.
The idea to add your residence where you live as a part of your investment mix or asset allocation, you know, if you think about the idea of planning and planning to never run out of money, planning to have enough financial independence, you want to be more conservative when you do that sort of work. And so perhaps having your residence outside of your investment pool or counting that as an asset might be a good way to hedge and be conservative that way. And second, yeah, I think real estate is a very important part of an asset allocation mix. I have clients that have 100% real estate, and they allocate by region, by property type, by age of property, and I have some that have 0 or 10 or 20%. So
we have one... Quick time for one tiny quick question.
I hope this one is fast. This is primarily for Vince and Rich. When you're looking into an area, real estate prices are a fundamentally local phenomena. What information resources do you typically tap in order to develop an understanding of what prices are reasonable in that area?
Okay, if we're talking about for homes and things of that nature, comparable sales and the time and relationship and looking at the trend of things. If I took comparable sales, let's say in 2004 and 5, I would be behind the curve. I'd have to anticipate some level of appreciation to tell people what they should offer for a home. Okay, if comparable sales were $600,000 in July and we're looking in September in 2004, I can't tell them you should offer $600,000, you're going to get the home. We had to anticipate what it would be at. But generally, if you see a lot of properties for sale, the days on the market, days in the market exceeding typically 60 days, the level of inventory, how many months inventory are out there. Right now we're at about 7 months inventory. In the dark days of the 90s, we were up to 18 months inventory in some parts of the state. That was a real factor. So if it approaches more than 10 months inventory, that may affect the marketplace.
In particular, how do you determine days on the market without, I mean, it seems real estate agents are reluctant to provide that sort of information.
Then get a new real estate agent, because they should be able to provide you all that information. And there's no shortage of realtors or real estate agents out there, okay? and those that have worked more than 10 years may be great, the experience there, but people that have entered into other industries are coming into real estate, and they're really communicating very well. So it's who you feel comfortable with working with, and they should be able to give. There's information all over the internet, but they should be able to translate it into something that's useful for you.
Thank you.
Please give a big hand to our panelists. Now this meeting of the Commonwealth Club Inforum is adjourned.